All right, so a few, actually it was this year, we were going through 11th grade history with my class, and my students came across this saying that puzzled them, and I think I was a little unfamiliar with it too. It was, they were talking about a president or someone like that and saying how they used the carrot and the stick in order to get their purpose achieved. And they were wondering, what is the carrot and the stick? What's all that about? And I at first had the wrong idea, but I think it basically means that the carrot is the thing you use to get the, usually think of a donkey or something like that, to come towards you. And the stick is the thing you go behind them with to whack them, to get them to go forward. So the carrot is the bait, the stick is the punishment. So it's a sad fact, but real fact of teaching that many students just do not do their best. And teachers often don't know what to do to get them up to their best. I've been in this position many times. You know, I wonder, does this kid need a little more pressure, or do they need a bit of bait to draw them forward? Is this a case for consequences or rewards? The carrot or the stick? Discipline or incentives? You know, the problem with this question, asking it like that, is an either-or question, is that it's not really either-or, it's really both and, or at least it can be. So with this class, what I'd like to do is look at some general principles that we can use to give us some guidance on what discipline's for and what incentives are for, and look at some weaknesses and strengths of both of them. So let's talk about effective balance a little bit. Actually, before I go further, I would like you guys to ask questions anytime you please. I mean, mostly anytime you please. Like to hear from you guys. So let's think a little bit about what we're trying to achieve with incentives and discipline. Some things I think of are order in the classroom, very important. We want to have high morale in our classroom. That's number two. We want goodwill between us and the students. We want engaged and creative students who are into their work. And very importantly, we want students of character. So those are four things I think of that incentives and discipline can help us get to. So let's look at some things that can help us sort of get a picture of the balance between the two. They're not perfect analogies. I'm sure you could poke some holes in them, but I think they work pretty well. So the first one is what I call the behavior baseline. So your school has a baseline where students are expected to at least come up to this with their behavior. If they are below it, that's considered unacceptable. We want to get them to be above that. So I would say that discipline is used to get them up to that baseline. If we want them to go above it, that's where incentives come into play a little more. And it shouldn't probably be a school or classroom policy to reward students for things that are really below that baseline. Kind of give them the wrong message there. If we want them to be above that, if that's expected of them, why would we reward them for something down there? But I think that each student comes to school with their own sort of baseline, don't they? They kind of bring it from home, from their circumstances. They're not all the same. And so let's balance that. We have our school baseline, our classroom baseline, but each student has something in them as well that they bring from home. There is a time, I think, for maybe an incentive to help bring them up to that school baseline. Just maybe not as a thing of school policy. There are times that we need to reach down and help them up with that. So some examples where how this fits in real life school, you know, cheating. I think that's pretty obvious that that's below the baseline. That's not acceptable. Deadlines for work, getting work done on time. Now schools vary on what is acceptable there and what is unacceptable. But things like if you want to see a student improve in their grades, grade improvements, where does that lie? Is that above or below the baseline? Is that thing for incentives or discipline? Or like acts of kindness. If we want students to be kind to each other, are we going to go and use the stick? Be kind. Hopefully not. I don't think that would work very well. That's really above the baseline in some ways. And baselines vary by teacher, by grade. Obviously, you're not going to expect the same thing from kindergartners that you expect from high schoolers. They vary by school, by culture, by country, by time period. You read about schools in the 1800s, they saw things quite a bit differently than we do, I think. So think about a little bit where your baseline is. What do you expect from students? It might help to make that a little more clearly defined. And number two, there's times to move it up. Maybe we have it a little bit low. But when we move it up, there is probably going to be pushback sometimes. So it helps to be clear about that and, you know, tell students, if you're going to raise it up, that I'm doing this because I expect big things from you and I believe in you. Okay, so that's the first sort of analogy, the behavior baseline. Next one I called building. Does anyone recognize that word? Anyone know how to say it?
Neuschwanstein.
Okay. I usually said it the American way, Neuschwanstein. So it is I've always been impressed because it's this beautiful castle in Germany. It's in Germany, right?
Yep.
I believe so. It's just, you know, a fairy tale castle, really beautiful. So I just use this because we're trying to build something beautiful with our classroom and with each student that glorifies God. And I think that discipline might be that strong foundation that we need first, of order, respect. And without that foundation, we're not going to be able to do much else. And I think incentives, among other things for sure, but incentives are one thing that can help us maybe get up the rest, build up that rest. I think we should remember, too, that the Christian life is not just avoiding doing bad, which is kind of what discipline's for, but it's about actively doing good. And it's very hard to force people to actively do good, but it's the whole heart of the gospel. Okay, another analogy. Probably some of you have heard about this, but it's something that I found very helpful, the relational bank account. So for every relationship you have kind of a bank account of, I'll call it goodwill. That's the word I'm using today, I guess. When you do something kind to a person, you sort of make a deposit into that bank account. You go shake someone's hand. That's a very small thing, but it might be a little bit of a deposit of goodwill there. If you do something mean, if you snap at a student or something like that, you've just made a withdrawal. I think you guys know what that feels like. You don't really want to be around that person. You don't trust them because that bank account of goodwill is just not there. You go pat a student on the back, you made a deposit. If you snap at a student, you make a withdrawal. But you could still maybe get that back by apologizing. But the point is, we want to keep that relational bank account full of goodwill as much as we can. It's hard with some students if you have to be constantly using discipline because they're below that behavior baseline. That means we have to work harder to make deposits. This saying has helped me a lot. People don't care what you know unless they know that you care. I believe that's true, especially for people you're with a lot. And we should definitely look at what Scripture says a little bit. So, what does Scripture say about incentives? I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but very obviously, God gives us rewards after this life. He also gives us rewards in this life, although they're not always physical, but you have the reward, the incentive of a clean conscience, which is a really wonderful thing. It's definitely an incentive for me. And it can also be a sort of discipline, because a unclean conscience is not fun. There are physical rewards of following God's principles, because God's principles work in the world He made. And so there's that. Freedom of living for God's will, the joy and peace that come from that, those are all real incentives that God does give. I don't know if they should be the reason we live for God's will, but they're definitely there. Discipline. What does Scripture say about discipline? So, I'm just going to read two verses here. First one is Hebrews 12:11. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. The peaceful fruit of righteousness. I just want to remember that phrase. It yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. This one is pretty blunt. This is in the ESV version. It says, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. Proverbs 12:1. Ouch. So that's more talking about ourselves, but we see that reproof is needed. And so I think this, a big thing I get from Scripture about discipline, is that we have a fallen nature and we need discipline to bring us to our proper place, which is down on our knees. And I've experienced that so many times myself, that discipline can bring me to that rightful place before God. So really quick, maybe we can use these analogies just a little bit to look at some common school scenarios. I'm just going to brush over them quickly, but misbehavior is a case for using incentives, using discipline. Things like disrespect, unkindness, rebellion, disobedience, unruliness. What about procedural violations like tardiness, late work, scoring wrong, not getting your teacher check signed? That's a CLE thing anyway. What if you want increased engagement? You want them to use their imagination more? Want them to ask good questions? Enthusiastic participation? What about what the Bible calls good works? Being a servant, responsibility, being kind. What about extracurricular learning? More reading, more reports, experiments, I don't know, memorization, all that kind of stuff. Where does all this fit in? So hopefully we can use those analogies to know when is a better time for incentives, when's a better time for some discipline. All right, so now I want to look at more specifically about incentives, and then later we'll look a little more closely at discipline. So, incentives. In this class, when we talk about incentives, I think what we mean is artificial incentives. We call it AI, I guess, since people like to talk about artificial intelligence. Artificial incentives. So things that we dangle in front of the student to get them to work a little harder. But I'm going to touch on this later, but God has actually built into our brains or souls or however you want to view that, He has already built into us an incentive system, which is really powerful. So I would say that artificial incentives, excuse me, are the training wheels in order to get us to actually be in tune with God's incentive system. Okay, so getting a little more practical here. And I'd love to hear from you guys on this part. Some things I've tried, I'll just share a few practical examples for incentives. This last year, I just thought of this one. I thought it would be a kind of a nice boost for students that they were kind of getting into basketball. So I told them that if someone could make 8 out of 10 shots from the 3-point, I'll buy you a new basketball. And someone made it that very night. It didn't last very long. But the problem with that one was that it was the person who we all knew would get it. So there's a downside of incentives that often happens. He was a guy who excels at sports anyway. But it was still an extra boost for him, strengthened our relationship, I think. One thing we've tried is a readathon. Have anyone here done a readathon before? Okay. So what you do for that is, this is just to get students to read more. Students go and get sponsors who agree to pay a certain amount for every page they read. Say, often it's like 1 cent. But they don't pay the student, they pay towards an organization or goes to some cause like that. We did one where it went to buying Bible study literature for prison inmates. And yeah, students read a lot. I couldn't believe one student read, was it 20,000 pages? I couldn't read that much, no way. It was in a month. She was a speed reader. One thing I tried that you could use sometimes, but might not always be a good idea to do all the time. I told students that if you study for a certain amount of time, I think it was like 15 minutes, I'll raise your grade automatically just for doing that extra study. And encourage students to study. You could use it, you know, for an extra boost, but, you know, you want to be careful with that, for sure. We have an honor roll system where if you meet certain requirements, you go on an honor roll trip. There are some downsides to that, but some good things too. One thing I've always thought was pretty helpful was I write students' name on the board if they score better than the last quarter's average. So it encourages improvement. I also do it if a student gets 100%, but encourages improvement, which I think is very important. CLE, we use CLE and they have the star charts. You know, you get that gold star, which is something I forget about, but I think it's a little incentive that's always there that I think helps. I remember being motivated by that when I was in school. One of my co-teachers had a thing where he put on the wall, a checkerboard, and he divided the class into teams, and every time they score, I think he got an improvement, kind of like I said, or 100%, they were allowed to move their checkers. So it was an ongoing checker game between these two teams. So that was kind of cool, and it was teamwork. I think sometimes it was, you know, after a while it was obvious who was going to win, but yeah, you just need to try things. Sometimes they don't always work, but has anyone tried a classroom economy? I know Jonathan, you talked to me about that. Should have you explain that. I have not done it myself, but it's, I know you have to basically use Monopoly money. You have to pay rent for your desk. And you get awarded for certain things, grades, I don't know, extra work, that kind of stuff. And you get fined for things. So it's like this actual economy system that teaches them responsibility, the use of money, and encourages hard work and all that stuff. I believe it's kind of a lot of work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of hard to keep it all straight, but very well be worth it. Anyone have any examples they want to share? You heard of or tried?
One of the things that makes a cash system like that work is a bank statement that we call it. That a student every day they had a bank statement that they kept track of the in and the out, and then every morning we reconcile the bank statement. They came up and I opened my bank, which is a little box that has all that funny money in, and it could actually kind of help.
Yeah.
I guess I use that, and I reconcile once a week, and they were penalized if they were off on their statement.
Okay.
And I guess one thing I would say is it's a lot of work, but there's a tremendous amount of teaching opportunity in it.
It's real life
you
stuff.
A lot of thought into and try maybe, but probably not every year.
Yeah, maybe not every year. Yeah.
Which grades was that?
The high school.
Yeah, likewise. Then we had an auction every, what, 6-8 weeks, and the students that brought in frozen pizzas and pop and whatnot, and you could buy that stuff.
Yes. Right.
We did field trips, extra field trips, but they had, it was teamwork, and they had to pool their money to pay for them. So
okay.
It was kind of neat that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Kind of took care of that thing that all the people getting the hundreds were.
Yeah.
So I was more of a communist system. You
know? Yeah, right. All right. I have a handout I'll give you guys, I think I'll wait to the end. I found this online, this website called PBISrewards.com, and they have a ginormous list of different things you can do for incentives. Just read one here, or two, like admission to a game of students versus teachers. That can be really motivating. Admission to a dodgeball tournament. Anyway, they're kind of, some of them almost seem weird, you know, you might not feel comfortable doing them, like this is just too strange, but they really get you thinking. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some weaknesses of incentives. We touched on that a little bit already, but one big one is that they can teach the wrong motives, greed, obviously, pride, thinking, you know, what can I get out of this? And this is probably the most important thing that would be good to remember, is that they can erode internal motivators. Really what we want from students is to be motivated internally with God's incentives and not need the money or whatever to incentivize them. And engagement can't really be bought in the long term. There's some interesting studies I was looking into about this, how that show there's little correlation between job satisfaction and salary amount. And if you think about it, like just teachers, long-term teachers probably aren't doing it for the money. They'll be doing it because it fulfills them. And there's also, when it comes to incentives, it seems like there's a difference between simple tasks, say like studying your spelling words, versus creative tasks where you really have to do some hard thinking. And it seems like incentives work a lot better for those simple tasks than creative ones. So, you know, you have to think, when have I gone too far with these incentives? Maybe it's when they start expecting them, and maybe when they aren't working anymore. Sometimes they just get boring and they aren't motivating anyone anymore. I've experienced that. So the biggest thing to remember there is watch out that they don't erode internal motivators. Okay, so what about some blessings of incentives? I want to talk about two stories and see some lessons we can get from that. So a few years back, with the help of my brother-in-law, he learned to juggle three balls. And it was surprisingly easy. You just do one little step at the beginning, practice that, and you can do it with a bit of practice. Anyway, I thought it'd be interesting to teach my students to do this. So for PE, we learned to juggle. Some of them. Some of them definitely struggled more than others. But I said, okay, we're going to learn how to juggle here. And in a month, we're going to have a contest. And whoever can get the most catches without messing up, you have to stand in front of them and count them. They're going about like this speed. Actually, the one guy was probably more like this. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, almost that fast. But whoever can get the most catches without messing up will win, divided between guys and girls, did them separately. And they'll get a prize. And the thing that really motivated them, it seemed, was they said then that the winner will then go up against me, and if you beat me, you can sit at my desk for the day. And so it's actually one of my proudest moments as a teacher, and I've had a ton of very, very much the opposite of that, of just total flops. So don't get me wrong, I'm talking about my victories here, but I have a lot of other experiences. But it was a little seventh grader. He was struggling in school, and it was so good to see him just come alive and just see his gift. He was just amazing at this. And yeah, he beat me, and he got to sit at my desk for the day. And it was really cool. His dad actually sent me a video just this last year of him at Bible school, and they had this talent show, and he was juggling. And he had improved his art by so much. He even, what was he all doing? All kinds of different jugglings over the back. He even was juggling an apple and would eat a bite of the apple between throws. It was crazy. But some lessons I learned from that is that, and I think this one's big, incentives build morale. They really build class morale. If you can do something that where you reward the class as a team or they all get behind it together, it's such a morale booster. And they make a big deposit into that relational bank account, so they sure can. And they learn that rewards at the expense of the teacher's ego are very motivating, it seems. There's a few on this list like that. You know, maybe you could take that too far, I'm sure. But I think they can be kind of fun. Show students that you're not afraid to make a fool of yourself a little bit. Okay, another experience I had, this is for me as a student. When I was in fifth grade, it was a period of time where I was having homework every night and I wouldn't get it done. I'd come to school and have to stay in at break and finish that homework. And I just was young enough that, I don't know, I just didn't know how to get out of this rut. Didn't have enough self-control. But I still remember, we're sitting in Pizza Hut, and my dad asks, Gilbert, what's something you'd really like to do? And I didn't know where this was coming from, and I said, well, I'd like to go mule deer hunting. That was just what I thought back then. And I said, okay, if you can get done with your goals and not have homework for the next 2 weeks, I'll take you. And so I did. And it wasn't nearly as hard as I thought. And it was awesome because hunting wasn't the only reward I received. But the biggest reward I received was getting that feeling of being done and being on top of the wave instead of being drowning, trying to keep from drowning. And he let me experience that. And sadly, I didn't just change overnight. And from then on, I've never got homework at all. But I had that mark back there where I knew I could do it. And I knew what it felt like. So incentives can help students experience God's incentive system. And they get to feel the feeling of doing something worthwhile because they want to, not because they have to. Another thing incentives can do, strengthen relationship, show students that you care about them, and also show students how to love others. Because I feel like that thing my dad did for me was an act of love and showed that he cared about me. And now I am thinking with my son and my students, I want to show them that. And so it's a good example. And here's also a big one. Incentives can show us what students are capable of. So sometimes, you know, you're not sure, is it his own effort that's holding him back, or is it his mental capability that's holding him back? And you're just not quite sure. And then sometimes you try an incentive and you see, whoa, he can do way better than I thought. And then it's like, gotcha, I know how good you can do. So now you can never pull the wool over my eyes anymore. Remember one time, this one eighth grade or seventh grade boy was really struggling with his spelling words. And I just told him that if you can get through a whole language book and not fail any of your spelling tests, which is kind of an instance of going below that baseline and reaching up. I said, I'll get you a prize. And he just latched onto it. And he did it. And it was funny because he was finding all kinds of creative ways to study his spelling words. He would draw a circle of actually a few circles on the page, and he'd write his spelling words around the circle. I guess that was fun for him or something. But yeah, and he did it. And then I knew, you know, he is capable. So it shows you what students are capable of, or can. Okay, so those are all artificial incentives. Let's talk about God's incentives a little bit. Natural incentives. And I think this is very, very important. God has implanted into our brains in a sort of incentive system. So here's the thing, is that I think they're often acquired tastes. So as an analogy, when I was in school, if you would have offered me coffee to do well in school, I don't think it would have done much for me, because I didn't really start liking coffee until I was about 18. But since then, I have acquired a taste for coffee. And now if you would offer that reward, it would incentivize me. So I think sometimes we need to sort of acquire a taste for God's incentives. So like this, there is a good feeling that you get when you get done with stuff early before you have to. And sometimes we just sort of miss that. It seems like students, they probably sort of experience it, but they don't have enough self-awareness to think, to actually revel in it a little bit. Like, wow, this really feels good. Maybe we should help students think about it a little bit. Like, doesn't that feel good? Maybe we should pause a little bit and see if you could do that again next time. Just think about this. Have you ever experienced acquiring a taste for God's incentives, of like being more intentional, of being more in control, of more self-control, and you realize that it's just really nice. It feels good. It's life is a little more in control, and you start to like it, and so you want more of it, and you go back for more. I think God's incentives offer a deep satisfaction and peace instead of shallow, immediate pleasure. I think there's actually different chemicals in your brain where you have the the one for sort of immediate pleasure. Anyone know what that
dopamine?
I think it's the one that gives you a more gentle satisfaction. I forget what that one's called, but anyway, it seems to me that God's incentives usually tend to be on that side of it. Okay, so what am I even talking about? These natural incentives. You might be confused at this point, but a few that I think of here. I've already mentioned this one, but finishing. One student was asked, "What's the most beautiful word in the English language?" And he said, "Done." And I think he's pretty onto something there. So let's help students experience that. Some students get so bogged down. Maybe we should make some exceptions sometimes. Don't let work pile up too much. You have these perfectionists who are constantly behind. If they have a writing assignment, they're going to take forever on it. Do what we can, as much as we can, to help them experience being done, maybe being done early. Here's a big one. Something that God incentivizes is a feeling of working hard. David Martin said, "The trouble with a lot of students is that they do not work hard enough to make the work fun." Have you guys experienced that? That, you know, you're just sort of doing your work, hammering around. Like, I worked at a trust factory once, and I just remember kind of making the switch from looking at the clock and just sort of getting by to looking at the work and thinking, what am I going to get done here? And just how much better it felt. It's nice to work hard. It feels good. Some people literally like the feeling of the burn in their muscles. I don't know if I like that so much, but I really like the pleasure of focus It feels good to focus. Stop looking at the clock. Maybe we should ask our students a little bit, is daydreaming fun? Do you really enjoy it that much? Maybe we should try focus a little bit. Well, I need someone to tell me that. Another of God's incentives. I mean, obviously, we've got to be careful with this one, but winning approval. It is a reality that you win the approval of your peers, but how much should that be an incentive? I mean, it feels like it's going to be there. Anyway, you can think about that. But the approval of your teacher and your parents, the authority in your life, getting their approval, that is, I think, healthy to some extent. And teachers, let's use that. Let's praise. Let's use praise and let's mean it. And then the approval of yourself. And most importantly, save the most important for last, the approval of God. That's what we want them to focus on, to acquire a taste for. And then some others that I won't dwell on very long, but the pleasure of a job well done, standing back and looking at what you did. The pleasure of creating, the pleasure of wonder. That one's really big. Pleasure of doing the right thing. Okay, let's move on to more specifically on discipline. So when we say discipline, discipline is a kind of a confusing word to me sometimes because it can mean self-control. I think in this context we're talking of it sort of as, well, here's a definition that I found that I think fits. The practice of training people to obey rules or a code of behavior using punishment to correct disobedience. Before we look at the weaknesses and strengths of discipline, just some thoughts on implementing it. One book that has helped me a lot, I would really encourage you guys, if you feel like you need some help with classroom management, is the book Teaching with Love and Logic. It's not all true, as always, read with discernment. I don't know if it's written from a Christian worldview, but it has a lot of wisdom in there. Just two things I got kind of remember from that book is the idea of giving consequences with calmness and empathy for the student. It doesn't have to be harsh and berating them. And then this, you could expound on this, but getting the students to think and not feel. And what does that mean? We could explain that a lot. But anyway, if you want to know more what that means, I guess look at that book. I feel like it's, I can hardly go over that right now. And then another thing that I think we teachers miss a lot that we should watch out for is, do they need extra pressure, or do maybe they actually need extra instruction? So for an example, in 9th grade, English 1 in CLE, Book 5, they do some speeches. And students tend to get just overwhelmed and bogged down in that book, it seems like to me. And for me, I have to find a balance. I've too often just been pressure, 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 pressure. Come on, get it done, get it done, get it done. When I should have realized what they really needed was a little bit of instruction on how to get it done. Get down into the details. So let's talk about your notes. How many resources have you got? How many notes from each resource? Things like that. You know, actually get into the nitty-gritty practical stuff and show them how. It's surprising sometimes how much students need to be shown how. So they do need pressure, but they need instruction too. So even on behavior things, it might surprise you how much they actually need to be told how or what is actually right here. Okay, so some things to watch out for with discipline, weaknesses of discipline. Discipline without love can erode the goodwill you have in your classroom. And goodwill is a foundational need, which maybe kind of goes against my analogy of building the foundation with discipline. But ideally, we will have some goodwill between us and students. And discipline, not quite sure how to say this correctly, but it is often a withdrawal from the relational bank account. It definitely can be. If it's done in love, I'm not sure where that lands all the time. But, you know, it is by definition a negative encounter with someone. I feel like I've seen teachers, and I've done this myself, where you get into this kind of crazy cycle in your classroom where students feel like you are unjust or something like that, don't like you, something like that. And then they start behaving worse because of it. And then you get more harsh because of that. And then also you get insecure, or at least I have. You get insecure, and then you start pouncing on any little hint of misbehavior. You get in this cycle that just feeds on itself, and the momentum is going in the wrong direction. So we don't want that to happen with our discipline. Loving discipline. Some examples I've thought of things to watch out for. A young man was just telling me that when he was in second grade, he and his buddy, or they became buddies because of this, had to stay in for break time after time after time because they didn't score correctly. They missed some, you know, you missed this answer. It was wrong, but you didn't mark it wrong. So stay in for break. But he was in second grade. And I think he needed a little bit of instruction at that point. Second graders, you know, he doesn't know how in a lot of ways. And then I'm going to come back to that. But also something like this. Say you have a student who you're always having to tell them to hush. They're always interrupting you or something like that for other people. And just say, shh. And it just doesn't stop. So for both of these, you know, if the students aren't internalizing what we're trying to teach them with our discipline, maybe we should consider something different. So for both of them, it wasn't really fixing the problem, or we're not fixing the problem. So we need to get the goal of discipline is to make sure they internalize the lesson and they are going to do it without discipline. So if you're perpetually having to use it, maybe we should rethink what we're doing at that point. If you want to see some negative examples of discipline from literature, two Charles Dickens characters I think of as Mr. Creakle and Wackford Squeers. I think Wackford Squeers is a pretty good name for someone who he whacked a lot, literally. So, okay, so here's what we should be talking about, though, the strengths of discipline. I guess we went over this a bit already, but it builds that strong foundation. With discipline, we can build that foundation what good teaching is dependent on. I was one time walking in Seattle, I think it was, and there was this sort of makeshift barrier set up for construction, and I was able to peek through it just a little bit, and I was shocked because just on the other side of that barrier was a like at least 50 foot deep hole right there. I was walking right next to it and didn't realize it, and I was thinking it must have been the foundation for a skyscraper or some tall building, and you know they have to go really deep. And this thought came to mind that lots of our classrooms, we're pretty blessed because I feel like we have a pretty deep foundation laid with our students when it comes to discipline that we haven't even laid ourselves. We have their parents, and generations back, their parents. And it makes it nice for us, a deep foundation. Discipline teaches obedience. Sometimes you have to listen whether you like it or not. Obedience to authority begets obedience to God. Obedience to God is real freedom. Loving obedience to God. yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. And another big one, discipline keeps order, and we need that order. But like I said before, when it comes to order and things like that, we don't have to make a big fuss about our consequences. If all that's required is a look like that or something, maybe that's all we need to do. Don't need to pull out the rod necessarily. And I think when it comes to order, I really think students appreciate, especially older ones, a sort of down-to-business type atmosphere. We're here to do important stuff, to get some work done. This is not just fun. I take this seriously. I take your learning seriously. So let's get to work. And discipline helps students stay humble and contrite. And don't we all need that? Humble students are delightful. Proud students are definitely not. And I think we've all experienced that. So in conclusion, I just share this analogy that has helped me. I wasn't sure I was going to share it, but just really quick. In the world of sailing, of ships, they have a term that I came across that interests me. It's called a happy ship. They say, you want your ship to be a happy ship. Seems kind of childish, but anyway, it's where the sailors are motivated, but yet there is order. And they can get through their voyages without a mutiny because the sailors are well fed. They have the incentive of prize money, talking like old times here. But yet, of course, you've probably heard stories of the cat of nine tails and the very strict discipline that existed on those old warships. They wanted a happy ship. So if you can keep a happy ship for these next 9 months, I think that's what you're going for. If you can balance discipline and incentives. Thank you. I guess that's time.